Okay, it's Tzoraim Tovim, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome. A pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Dr. Zev Elef. I believe he last spoke for Torah in Motion on Thanksgiving Day 2020. If I'm correct, that's when he last spoke in Zoom. And he actually spoke in Toronto a couple years before that at the conference we ran. He's a historian, a young, I wouldn't say upcoming. I think he's came already, but, a young historian of American Jewish history. He is the president of Gretz College in Philadelphia, and he previously served as the academic officer at Hebrew Theological College, better known as Skokie, I believe, the Skokie Yeshiva. He's the author of many, many books, and there's 8 or 9 books, I believe, editing, authoring, and many, many, many scholarly articles on American Jewish history, including it came up in the last year. Hirsch's, Rav Shinshon Fall Hirsch came up, and he wrote a couple articles a few years ago in tradition, 2 articles on Hirsch's sort of didn't resonate in America, didn't resonate in the modern Orthodox circles. But that's for another time. And we're happy to have him here for the beginning of a 3-part series on how Americans historically transformed some of the aspects of Pesach, what used to be and what became. And we're going to start, as we were talking before, on Kitniyot. So, Bakasha, Dr. Elef, it's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kelman. I don't think I'm so young anymore. I had more hair the first time you brought me out to Toronto.
Everything's relative. Compared to me, you're very young.
It's always wonderful to learn with the Torah in Motion audience. Very knowledgeable, lively conversation. I'm so great to be a part of this community as an unofficial member. Our business this afternoon is Kitniyot, particularly with the curious case of Passover peanut oil, which has a really interesting history, which is quite mundane. It's domestic. At the same time, it resonates. And it's a fantastic, at least to my mind, portal of entry into not only understanding the dynamics of Pesach preparation, but also to challenge our understandings of where chumrah and kula, that is stringency and leniency, different folkways and pathways and foodways into Orthodox Jewish life in the New World. And so I want to establish where the scholarship is on this matter. A fantastic sociologist, Sam Heilman, recently retired from a really wonderful decades-long career at Queens College. He's still very prolific. He coined a phrase, sliding to the right. The assumption is that really in the post Holocaust period after World War II, by dint of new populations, particularly what he identifies as a Hungarian population, both Hasidic and Misnagdic, that is to say, the Brooklyn community that Heilman would have it, comes and teaches American Orthodox Jews about the power of chumrah. And he writes the following, does Heilman, the purpose of this volume, this book, 2006, Sliding to the Right, then, is to examine these developments in the contest within American Orthodoxy at the beginning of the new century. In particular, I seek to understand what was thought once to be the type of Jewish life and practice most ill-suited and at odds with America, Haredi Orthodoxy. I think specifically, Haredi connotes something very specific about Israeli orthodoxy. I prefer to call it yeshivish, call it orthodox right, but we get the point here. Has managed to secure itself here and how the trend of orthodoxy, once believed to be best fitted to survive here in the New World, this is the 20th century, modern orthodoxy now finds itself losing the ideological battle for survival. From is giving way to firmer. Now, this was challenged. As an example of it, here was a pamphlet that made a lot of commotion in the early 2000s about the fitness so to speak, of Orthodox Jewish young people attending what he calls secular colleges. It's not Heilman's text. This was co-authored by two Ivy League educated PhDs. Yehuda Turetsky and Chaim Waxman have a provocative article, Sliding to the Left, Contemporary American Orthodox and Modern Judaism, that appeared, about 10 years ago. Our hypothesis is that American Orthodox Jewry is much more heterogeneous than the above-cited observers perceive, mainly Heilman, that the modern Orthodox sector in particular is neither of one stripe nor has it overwhelmingly Haredi-ized, and indeed there have been some developments indicating significant ritualistic departure not only from the Haredi norms and values, but from traditional Jewish religious behavior as well. And here you have the 1997 Jofa conference. The organizers were expecting maybe 70 participants. Unfortunately, a young girl's bat mitzvah was derailed by the Queen's Vod HaRabbanim, which inspired 700 to 900 people, mostly women, as you can see from the post, the image, to attend this conference. They didn't have nearly enough. If you can get a hold of a program from that conference, you're in luck. Sell it on eBay. But before we get into the materials, this really does speak to another important work, which I didn't put here, which is Chaim Soloveitchik. Might be the most well-known article on American Jewish history, let alone American Orthodoxy, is Rupture and Reconstruction, which wasn't really, it was actually republished as a handsome volume quite recently, and the, Professor Soloveitchik updated it, responding to some of the critiques to it. But his suggestion, Dr. Soloveitchik says, had nothing to do with the Holocaust per se, but the rupture of migration, in which we have dislodged ourselves from learned religion of the home, what he calls mimetic tradition, and instead we have gravitated to text. But again, it's this linear path. What I so much appreciate about the Turetsky-Waxman quotation in their entire article is that in truth, no community, no individual moves in so linear a path left or to the right. And I published a book right before the pandemic about authenticity. It's called Authentically Orthodox, in which I argue that what it is all about a quest for authenticity. And depending on how you measure in which area you're looking at, whether it's Shabbat observance, whether it's social media, whether it's toys and children's culture, whether it's peanut oil, whether it's politics, in truth, you can find a variety of pathways. And it makes something very messy. And it's all a quest for a look and feel, a sensibility of a quest for authenticity. And I think that, well, we'll see. I'll ask you at the end, does peanut oil help us complicate what we mean by the messiness of trying to chart Orthodox life in the United States and in Canada, for that matter? Here is the state of affairs pre-peanut oil. A memoir found in the American Jewish Archives by a Sidney Roth. On the Lower East Side, 40 or 50 years ago, Passover preparations started months before the holiday, beginning about Hanukkah, when my mother went shopping for chickens for Shabbos. She bought only chickens with a lot of fat, because now was the time to start saving schmaltz for Pesach. And who could have too much schmaltz for Pesach? You need it for the chumslach and for the potato lox, for matzah brine, even just to put on a slice of matzah with a little bit of salt. You needed schmaltz because Pesach was a fleishiger yadav. Don't forget that this was in the days before Nayakat, and the Lukach family was only making kosher soap for washing dishes. There were no hashgachas for canned foods. Chocolate candy was avada chametz, and even butter was better not, according to my father. So there was very little you could have with matzah except for schmaltz. So there was a market for an improved cooking agent beyond chicken fat in the Lower East Side and elsewhere. at the beginning of the 20th century. And by 1941, no less than the administrative heads of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, when they were looking to preserve certain oils to lubricate tanks and for energy resources for World War II to fight the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, they said there was another oil that they were looking to promulgate among American kitchens. And so here is a text from 1941. The better grades of refined peanut oil are used in certain salad oil blends for which it is considered to have a superior value, trying to make an argument before Congress to create subsidies for the use of peanut oil in lieu of other oils. Peanut oil was less useful than other oils for the war effort. A white form of refined peanut oil enjoys much popularity among the Jewish trade in several Eastern cities. And in fact, so where did peanut oil come from? By historians of food culture, particularly peanuts, peanuts, are a snack food in the American South, which are discovered by Union soldiers in the Civil War. It is brought, they bring that to the North and plant it there. And it is used as a recreational snack, hence Barnum Bailey Circus, P.T. Barnum. It eventually migrates. Nobody in Europe has ever heard of a peanut. How it's associated with Moshe Rabbeinu in its Yiddish form is something beyond my comprehension, Moshe Rabbeinu Nissel. But it migrates to Europe in the 1870s. And so peanut oil is a relatively new food item altogether. Which is to say that the later Rishonim of the 13th century, which Ashkenazic authorities start to proscribe certain items as kidniot for two possible reasons. Number one, it can confuse people about the state of affairs on Pesach because of these, some of these products, some of these originally legumes, kidniot is literally a bean, a legume, could be made and furnished into something that looks a lot like bread and would confuse people. And the other possibility, the Rishonim have two opinions. The other opinion is that kidniot are troublesome on Pesach because unbeknownst to the user, grains are very often stored in packages, in containers of kidniot. And because of the strictures, we won't get into the issue of diversification material or not. But suffice it to say that because they were not isolated, because it could produce actual chametz, so that's why Ashkenazim, Sephardim made fun of Beis Yosef, for example, who is Rabbi Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. They didn't understand why Ashkenazim would put up with this. But Ashkenazim from the Ramaz time onwards, so 16th century onward, adopted a stringency, a chumrah on kidniot. And what I love, what's so interesting, I don't love kidniot, what is so interesting about kidniot is actually, it's totally non-textual. That is to say, is that if you open up the Gemara in Pesachim, it seems to suggest that kidniot are fully mutter. In fact, one, Rabbi Shaul, if you read him carefully, encourages the use of kidniot on Passover. So the chumrah is beyond any svar, right? This isn't an argument that can be made on what is the logical description or analysis of a particular codified Talmudic text, but is rather grows out of, this, of a rabbinic impulse, of a sensibility. Elu Devarim in the first source of Shulchan Aruch, Sheyotzim behem yidei chovot matzah. These are the items that you can fulfill your obligation of eating matzah. Minhag mikach lechatzchila chitim, and suggests the Shulchan Aruch follow, of course, his normative halachic practice is that wheat is the ideal grain to use for the production of matzah, ba love, and then gives on to another. But look at the bolded section, Haggah, and the gloss of the Ramah, by Moshe Isserles, ba minhag, ba ashkenaz, lahach. We don't allow for any other products other than grains, ba'in l'shanot, and don't bother with it, don't try to convince me, the minhag pashut, the pervasive tradition throughout all of Ashkenaz and Franco Germany is to withhold from use of kitniot. Mihu pashut de'inas from b'di'avad imaflu tochatav shel, but if it cooks in, then it's batel. It doesn't have the same high stringency as if grains, if wheat, for instance, fell into a recipe, into a pot, so to speak. So, and that's your Yoredeya quotient for today. So, but it was an open question of what counted as kidneyot. So, for example, no less than the Chai Adam, I'm going many centuries forward, but in the 19th century, published in 1810 and 1818, a very fine study by Simcha Fishbane has just appeared on the Chai Adam, seemed to suggest that potatoes are are Isur Kidneyot, that you should withhold from using potatoes, to which perhaps it's an urban legend. I don't think I've ever seen it in writing, but the Orach HaShulchan, Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein, he once commented on the Chai Adam's position, Bulbasas Hain Hain Chai Adam, say the Yiddish word for potatoes. These are, you could say, Chai Adam, meaning our life source, or he may have been calling the Chai Adam a potato. In any case, it was an open question of what counted as kidney, but you won't find the Ramah or anyone else designate itemizing peanuts or may kidney oat, right? The extract of kidney oat, because we're going to talk about peanut oil. So it's already a step removed. It's not just the actual peanut itself, but it's the extract, the may kidney oat. You won't see any of them indicating that because simply put, they didn't know what a peanut was. They didn't have access to that particular item, that foodstuff. So, if you take a look at one of the primary sources, and this is what the argument that I'm going to put forward this afternoon, is that from the history, and a very interesting, curious, fun, in fact, maybe not, maybe it raises some anxieties, but this interesting history, we are going to examine how various folkways move from Europe to the United States into a not quite a tabula rasa, I would suggest that, but where there weren't establishment hagim, various folkways, that being the Lithuanian or Eastern European folkway, then next subsequent Hungarian folkway, and then finally an Israeli folkway, converge on the New World, and peanut oil, maybe as silly as it sounds, becomes a really interesting test case in how these foodway folkways battle in the arena of Jewish law and Orthodox culture. So here is one of the most important sources on our subject. He also doesn't weigh in on peanut oil per se, but instead it's about a different item. Take a look at Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan Spector. Very few since have occupied the high station of halachic, enjoyed the status of halachic authority that Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan had in the late 19th century. Bahamavur v'orachayim sham degam shmeinim, so that there's certain kidneyot oils, hanasi mina kidneyot asurim, he's talking about flax, yesh lomar demairi zelo baru otam yikar v'pasol. But if you look at the let's look beyond just for make sure that we have enough time to cover all of our sources. Take a look at the bolded section. Mashain Kane, Bikiniot, Alas Yathesha, but he's talking about using certain flax or sesame seeds to produce alcohol, to produce certain type of schnapps. The Nisbatama Karpasal, Kane Nira Lee, Ain Lana Lahmer Klal Kane. Nero Lee. He is of the opinion that you are allowed to use cotton seed or sesame seed for the production of alcohol, perhaps on Pesach. And Eastern European Jews leveraged this when it came to the question of peanut oil. Be'inyan shemen shel kidneyot shenasu b'kavana. This is from Rabbi Hinken. Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Hanken was one of the major halachic authorities in the United States, but particularly where he was seated in the Lower East Side of New York. On the matter of kidneyot, oil that are produced for Passover and are separated from forbidden grains, that quotes the exact source that I shared with you from Isachon and Spector, both of Eastern European, particularly Lithuanian extraction. He's already said, can I rely on Isachon and Spector, of course, who enjoyed status in, we should say, in the United States. He was one of the few rabbinic leaders who at the end of the 19th century encouraged rabbinic migration to the United States. That's why so many of his students were here and why after he passed away in the late 1890s, some of his students established a rabbinical school named the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary, Yeshivas Rabbein Yitzchak Elchanan, which is today the rabbinical wing of Yeshiva University. The Prat Meg was Adama specifically writes Rabbi Henkin with regard to Begozei Adama, and if you didn't know what that meant, he writes it phonetically peanut. She'einam domim b'tzuratam l'dagan. It doesn't look at all, even when you process it, like actual bread stuff. Ein osim eham tavshin. Below pad badai she'ein l'hav. You don't have to worry about peanuts or peanut oil on Pesach. And perhaps even more important than Rabbi Henkin's position was Rabbi Shmuel Pardes, who writes in a journal called HaPardes out of Chicago. It would eventually migrate to that periodical, one of the foremost rabbinical periodicals in North America. It would eventually be reseated in New York. Mishalti, I was asked, writes Rabbi Pardes, Al Shemen Kanasa mi peanuts, im kasher lepesach v'shavti lahati. I've said it's perfectly fine. I was asked, and I keep on getting asked, because you have at least three essays that he writes as Rabbi Pardes in his rabbinical journal, each time affirming the use of peanut and peanut oil on Passover. Many people before me have already permitted it. He sweeps or gets an inspector into that lot. Nobody ever in Eastern Europe outlawed kidneyot because they didn't know from it. Vezehu min egos katan hanikra b'sifrei d'mayim, that botanists refer to it as a nislach. Kol gzera kidneyot rak b'minim sheish b'hem kemachim kemo pulim. What is the problem? It's only ones that you can actually process into some sort of flour, like a certain bean or a dashim. All sorts of different types of lentils and the like. The low be'elush ein behem shum dimyon l'dag. But not like peanut. Come on, give me a break. Peanut oil, you can't make a loaf of bread out of. Ve'ein amasek baharbe erob dian polin negulat. And I already know that when it already migrated in the late 19th century, to Eastern Europe, Polish Jews used peanuts and peanut oil. And so that's how, by and large, peanut oil became the Passover oil. Why Rabbi Pardes is so important? Because he also authorized hashkacha. So the fact that he offered rokeach permission to furnish a peanut oil was critically important. And in his, and people took out advertising in his rabbinical journal. That's exactly where the image on your right, on the screen, it's not Rokeach this time, but it's Planters Edible Oil Company produces in a combination of Hebrew, English, and Yiddish, Planters High Hut Peanut Oil, Shemen Shell Peanut, Kasher LePesach, L'Chol HaShana. Not just use it for your 8 days. It's good all year round. And that's why a Planters invested in a recipe book, in a cookbook, Planters High Hut Peanut Oil. It's in the middle screen. 46 ways to better Passover meals with one ingredient that is threaded throughout. You guessed it. Planters peanut oil. It was the Passover oil, as you can see from an advertisement that Planters like to produce year in and year out, a Passover recipe, not just from Planters oil, from the Passover oil. And then just to show you another source is that when Planters produced a global cookbook, they had an entry for Jewish cookery. This is in the 1960s. And of course, they highlighted the Planters peanut oil's use on Pesach. Now, this was not a fringe item. Here is a page from the Orthodox Union OU Kosher's directory from the 1960s, and which they still produce differently. It's glossy now. But you see under its entry for oil is Rokeach peanut oil. OU did not, not that they didn't sanction Planters peanut oil, but it belonged to another, I think a Rabbi Cohn was the one who certified Planters peanut oil. But OU took responsibility for authorizing Rokeach peanut oil for Passover kitchen use. Okay. Any questions? Fond memories, sad memories?
Oh, fond memory. In Baltimore, we had Planters peanut oil from before I was born. And my great grandfather, Avram Nachman Schwartz of Baltimore, we had it. We were his household and we used Planters peanut oil all the time. And I in the past, I know, 10 years or so, it's occurred to me that I can't find Kosher LePesach.
Not since 2002. Not since 2002.
So I'm very interested in what you have to say.
Oh, good. All right. So far, so good then. Okay. Well, it's going to get a little more pernicious moving forward for those who have stock in peanut oil for Passover. But again, well, the argument is that, first of all, conceptually, peanuts and peanut oil do not fit into the chumrah, into the gezeira, the ordinance to withhold, the disuse of kiniot on Passover. Nobody is arguing that we should abrogate the entire chumrah, the entire stringency of peanut oil, of kiniot rather. But two arguments made. Conceptually, peanut oil as a product does not fit into the rhythm of the chumrah, that's number one. And number two, the Ramah never knew for peanuts. And so we shouldn't try to backfill it in to an early modern chumrah. So that's the art. And again, this is not what's so fascinating about this art, about the entire conversation or polemic, as we'll see in a moment, is that this transcends reasoning and Talmudic analysis. This really does get at the core of the sensibility of Chumrah and Kula in North American Judaism. Elizabeth, I see you have a hand up. No?
Excuse me. Oh, I wanted to ask whether the same applies to sesame seeds and sesame oil. I seem to remember sesame seed candies from my childhood.
Yes.
So back in the 50s.
And we were talking before is that in Yaffa, in the Eid HaRida of Yerushalayim, was very upset with a young rabbi named Rabbi Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, who was the chief rabbi of Yaffa, who authorized the use of sesame seeds and sesame seed oil for a plant that was anchored in Yaffa. Yes, it's all tied here, although because no less than the U.S. Department of Agriculture identified the usefulness of peanut oil, it became the oil of choice, the ingredient of choice for Pesach. So highlighting this particular case, particularly because our historical actors, meaning the people that we're looking at, highlighted as well, provides for a fuller discussion of it. But yes, this would other items too, no question about it. Here is a text. I believe there are three different tshuvot in Igrot Moshe, in the multi-volume responsa of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, who along really after Rabbi Hankin, well, they certainly overlap, but he becomes one of the leading rabbinic authorities. And probably most of you will agree that of the status that Moshe Feinstein enjoys as a arbiter of halacha. For Moshe Feinstein, maybe you could tell from the image, but he was an even keeled person. Somebody who wrote sober halachic analysis, somebody who did not, it's hard to glean autobiographical materials in many of his responses. He was interested in the halachic analysis first and foremost. Take a look. This is, I give you the year. Tav Shin Chav Vav corresponds to 1966. Hine b'davar ha-pinat. Shekatavti shebahar b'mekomot. I've already written about this. Many places. Achlu otam b'pesach. And therefore, Tame, I'm beside myself. I'm puzzled. B'tam ha-davar mishum shashamash osin mimenu b'eza makom gan kemach. So, what's going on? Aval yad, she'ein zeh inuch. These chumros that I keep on hearing about, people keep on proffering and querying me on. It's not an inyan, klal. It's not something that I should be writing about. Shekol dvarim ha'osin mehem kemach ha'nes from minhag zeh, te'ein lecha davar ha'osin menu kemach ke t'bruchei adama lo rak v'medina zu. It's not. It's an issue. Like potatoes, alagam, be Europe, and the container of gam, be darat hakamonim olam, lo chashulis. Back in Europe, I used to eat peanuts all the time. Belachin shayef sheyitin hechsher. Therefore, the person who asked the question, you can tell the person who asked you, it was like asking for a friend type of question. Tell anybody who was interested, in my opinion, on hashkacha for peanut oil and Passover, shalom nitare sham chametz v'yachlu elu shalom nehagu b'zayisar v'chein ra'iti shnokim hachshar al peanut oil mehai taima. They don't mix. You can don't worry about it. You can see the frustration. You can read between the lines the frustration in 1966. Why? Sometimes, in other words, the hava, right? The emergence of the question itself in this historical moment suggests that something is changing. Rav Moshe Feinstein was not asked questions in which the matter was already decided, and people well know. Nobody would want to waste his time with that, and he certainly wouldn't write about it if it was an open and shut case. But the fact that this is a re-emerging issue suggests to Rav Moshe Feinstein he needs to write about it, and suggests to us as historians that something is happening. And something is happening. A little background in Europe is that the Rabbi Hananya Yom Tov Lipa Teitelbaum, the grandfather of the Satmar Rav, is a newspaper clipping, essentially, from Tuf Reish Ayin Gimel. I believe that's 1913. There is almost a clipping in a rabbinical journal, sort of an aside, that Haga'on, HaKadosh Ba'al Kedushas Yantav, that was how he was known, the Kedushat Yom Tov, based in the Kedosh of Saget, which was the forerunner to Satmar. So that's all. A lot of interesting works coming out on the history of Satmar, both in Europe and in America. One of them just won the National Jewish Book Award, A Fortress in Brooklyn. Another one came out by about Brooklyn, but about Curious Yellow, which is quite interesting. What did he do? Shadarish Berabin B'Shabbos, 1913, the Kedushas Yom Tov chose as his topic for his Shabbos Haggadot Shvasha, after great research on the matter, he delivered his Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, that is the Shabbat preceding Pesach, Passover, Shegozim Haniskar L'Ayel, peanuts, which were was pretty fresh and new to the European culinary scene. Haim Gidule Karka, they grow from the ground, Mamash, Uberchatan Barei Priha Adama. Right? There's also a debate about whether what bracha to say, ha'etz or ha'dama, but asur la'achlam, v'pesach. What was the real issue? To ban peanuts and peanut oil, kamosha in Oakland, Bashar Kidney. The Kedushas Yantif delivered what was likely an hour-long discourse to ban peanut and peanut oil from his Hasidic community in Hungary. And so we also have Michtavo, Ayagaga, Giani, B'chol Davar Im La'asot Shemen L'Pesach, your important letter has reached me. Migarinei Prachem B'ikra Davar Hadin Imo Ki Eina Min Kitniot Klal Ava B'chol Zot Ein Dati Nocha. He's writing to, this is actually found an excerpt in the Satmar Haggadah, in the traditions of the Satmar Rav, Rabbi Elish Teitelbaum, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, who was asked about kidneyot, but he says, Ein dati nocha lahatir, pen yomer beidin shari, mishchav achlu, kol shmanim shemen zayin, shemen asuyim kidneyot. Don't have peanut oil, suggests the Satmar Rav, because it might confuse you with other prescribed oils, vizeh asur b'afil, and you can't eat it either. And so you have this Hungarian folkway, which has migrated after the Eastern European variety to the Americas. It will have, it has no truck for these newfangled oils. Rabbi Chazka Roth, another important halachic decision maker in Brooklyn, he writes the following also around this time. Hine Margo Bukumbi is well known. The Alma and the entire Jewish world. Shagozim Shikorin American or Nisalach. American nuts, which is peanuts. Haim Bechlau. It's also known again, I mentioned before, as Moshe Rabbeinu Nisal. It's somehow attached to Moshe Rabbeinu. Anybody has any suggestions? I'd love to hear them. Haim Bechag Zer Kenya Vasalach and Pesa. Veroy Vahavi Khan Dibre Marana Kadosh Chasam Sofer. And quotes of Chasam Sofer I alluded to before about where he banned without any exception kidneyot when there was a famine in Westphalia, where they could have used some relief. He said no, because it would only lead to the further infiltration, he would have called it, of Reform Judaism. Adrab Leinu Lahosid Gedar V'Sayeg, says the Chasam Sofer. To the contrary, we shouldn't be creating a respite from kidneyot, we should be adding to it. So in that spirit, suggests Rabbi Chazka Roth, peanut oil should certainly be banned. This is all Hungarian in style and presentation. And the inroads are apparent, no question about it. Two important guidebooks, right? By the 1970s, there's the emergence of a new genre of English language halachic literature. Rabbi Shimon Eider, it doesn't look like this initially, it comes in pamphlet form. He's an important figure in his own right. And Rabbi Avram Blumenkrantz, I think they still produce these, The Laws of Pesach, a digest. These are Eastern European trained rabbinic authorities, and they're very accessible. They're in English. And here in Rabbi Shimon Eider, enjoyed a very close relationship with Moshe Feinstein. So it's altogether interesting. And in 1977, Rabbi Shimon Eider, in his summary of Halachos Pesach, concerning the question of whether liquids, for example, corn syrup and other derivatives of kidney oats are included in the Gezerah, that is the ban of kidney oats, and whether peanuts and peanut oil are considered as kidney oats, there are various opinions among the poskim. One should conduct himself or herself according to his or her minhag. If one is uncertain of his minhag, a rav should be consulted. So all of a sudden, the stronghold that the Lithuanian rabbinic folkway has had on the United States is coming undone, at least as now we're offering multiple contingencies, multiple options. You consult your local Orthodox rabbi, suggests Rabbi Shimon Eider. It's not a pushing question. This betrays the anxieties of earlier writers, Peter Grosch Feinstein. not everybody's of the same mind. Rabbi Avraham Blumenkrantz writing, I think it proceeded, this is from 1981, but I think that his digest preceded 1981. But this is the version that I had. Please read this important notice. There are rabbis who permit important notice, meaning it's no trivial matter. There are rabbis who permit the use of oils and syrups that are derived from kidneys, legumes, such as soya and corn oil, lichen, soya derivatives, and corn syrup. On the other hand, there are other rabbis who are more stringent, right? Not even identifying who the stakeholders are concerning this and do not allow the use of these products on Pesach. So all of a sudden, there are multiple opinions by the 1970s. In American kosher homes. But it wouldn't be the Hungarian folkway alone that could dismantle the East Lithuanian kula. So take a look at David Zvi Hoffman, who is the rector, the head of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Berlin, but it's not the German folkway I'm interested in. It is David Zvi Hoffman's impression of matters, of contemporary halachic matters in Israel. In Eretz Yisrael, v'hine hugad shegam ha'pri shekaren urdenus, really grounded. Botanim ein ochlim b'Yerushalayim b'Pesach mibnei gzeres kitniot. I've heard, writes Rav David Zvi Hoffman, that peanuts are banned on Pesach in Yerushalayim. U'be'emet pri zehu min kitniot. Shekane Kol Asharbi Tachara Karka Vinik is something of a scientist. How they grew. They grow from a vine that stems directly from the ground. Vinikra Gamkein Bachmat Batnik Botanists, one of the Sibi Igor, Xeras, Kinyot, Blisafek, Lohaya al Pirukela. I don't believe that Kinyot that should fall in line with the rhythm of Kinyot banning. Asher al Kane ani nota lahatim b'shem im yaskimu imi harav the Hamburg. This is the Würzburger Rav. The Rav in Posen. The ainli panai larichi. So I don't have the guts to do it myself, but if I have a consensus from other leading rabbinic authorities, then I will. Suggest that peanuts can be used, can be on passive. V'yesh lahosif alza ki kvar hora zakein, who is he talking about? Of Samson Raphael Hirsch, hatir shemen shumshamin sesame oil, his predecessor, he was very beholden to, both Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, but also Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch in Frankfurt, v'apte shemen shumshamin. And we have a tradition here in Germany, and even though in Israel they have already banned sesame oil for Passover, lo amlein vi lahat. Mikol makom, benidid didan, but for our purposes, dein kan, ani chashashob, b'shemen ashum shemin, ein lahachar, kol kach. Achar kach, shamati, agon, dekovna, referring to Yitzchak Inspector, in Be'er Yitzchak, hatir, b'shemen shemin. So I am... we are vindicated by the position of the author of the Be'er Yitzchak, who I read to you before, but it's called Inspector, but in Yerushalayim, he is under the impression, the distinct impression, they are much more stringent about the use of kidney oats, and or at least count, not use of kidney oats, but counting certain items in the ban of kidney oats. So Tzvi Pesach Frank is probably a good example of the Israeli folkway. I was asked about cottonseed oil. He asked about peanuts. He bans them both. And interestingly, more recently, is Shlomo Yosef Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv offered the following in his compendium of halachot and menagim: shemen, mizera, cannabis. Cannabis, cottonseed. I guess he anticipated certain legislative changes in Eretz Yisrael. Noah gim lo lechol shemen. Shumshamin, the rov hamon Yisrael, ochlim shemen, shumshamin. Shud, geshimosha, zirkinio, chayach, So the bottom line, I'm providing the source, not getting into too much of the detail of Kant and other things that he's writing about, is that he is aware that there's differentiation between areas between the minhag, between the, I wouldn't call it minhag, the folk ways, the rabbinic cultures in Europe and, in Israel and America. Right. So, let me make sure. I see the chat is filling up, so I don't have a chance to read it now, but certainly we'll have time for a discussion. Happy to listen and to answer whatever I can. Here's interesting. Rabbi Bera Levy, who's the OK, produced a magazine called The Jewish Homemaker. And take a look. This is in the 1980s. This is right before Moshe Feinstein was to pass away in 1986. Because this is a Pesach issue, and I always have many inquiries about peanut oil, we give our hechsher on Planters peanut oil. I again wish to print the tshuva of HaGaon Moshe Feinstein Shlita with reference to peanut and peanut oil. This is actually a new tshuva. I don't believe this version was printed in Negus Moshe. And you can see again by the 1980s, he's under fire, is Rabbi Bera Levy. I authorize, and people ask me, are you sure, Rabbi? Are you sure it's permitted? We hear not so. You can see, not even between the lines, he receives many inquiries, and it'll suffice offers. Let me offer what Moshe Feinstein said, peanut oil, and I can stand on his shoulders. By 1993, in the Dapa Kashrus, the OU has written, the OU certifies as kosher for Passover pure peanut oil. It is questionable if peanuts are kitnios, and it is questionable in general if oils are kitnios. Please note that peanut oil is not used in any OUP products. So OU certifies a brand or multiple brands of peanut oil if you want to purchase it, but for various processed products, the OU is notifying its community already by the early 90s that even if you are machmir, even if you are stringent, know that we have designated that all of our authorized products do not have peanut oil used in their ingredients. By the early 2000s, essentially, the way that it was told to me that the Planters had already stopped. They didn't have anybody to certify their peanut oil any longer. And finally, Rokeach, I'm led to believe, was the last company that produced a kosher certified, Passover certified peanut oil. They did it because they thought they needed to. It needed to be part of their suite of options. But when it was a coming of the minds between kosher supervisors and the manufacturers, Rokeach was thrilled to find out that there was much backlash. There was much consternation over various hashgachot, various kosher certifiers in standing behind this Eastern European, this Lithuanian folkway. And Rokeach was thrilled to learn the request that they should discontinue the line of peanut oil because they weren't making any money off of it anyway because nobody was using it. As a postscript to the saga is quinoa. Quinoa broadens Pesach menu in the Boston Jewish Advocate, but sparks a rabbinical debate. In about 2009 to 2012, you could count on every Jewish newspaper, featuring some sort of article or tidbit about this newfangled thing. It wasn't that quinoa was just discovered, but it entered into the kosher cuisine sometime after 2000. And the question reemerged about chumra versus kula. First, the Star K authorized it. Eventually, the Orthodox Union does as well. And now today there are certified Passover kosher quinoa, but there are no certified, as I mentioned before, Passover peanut oil. The inconsistency speaks to the matter of authenticity, is that at a particular moment in time, peanut oil was under siege. And we're not going to reopen that discussion for all the different frustrations, irritation. But when a new issue comes, even though it betrays the analysis and the considerations of another product, that being peanut oil, we have the ability to rethink matters. Yes, it's an inconsistency, I think, at its very basic level, but it also speaks to the dynamics of Orthodox Judaism, of what can look authentic, what doesn't look as authentic as something else. In that way, Chumrah or Kula, sliding to the right, shifting to the left, they're both true. It's just a matter of seizing that moment, understanding that part of what's interesting and very curious about American Orthodox Judaism are all of its different pathways, which are sinuous and sometimes messy, but altogether fascinating. We still have a few minutes. I'm happy to, again, I'm not weighing in one way or the other, but happy. I hope that it's an interesting, at minimum, it was an unusual pathway to understand. You don't usually think about women's issues. You think about synagogue ritual, peanut oil. But in fact, I think that this, it becomes even clearer, the dynamics of change in history on the American Jewish scene. Okay, Rabbi Sachs. Go ahead. You're on mute.
Yes, just two points. One, it has to do with cannabis, because right now it is given to many cancer patients and many other medical patients. So my question is, in that case, especially for those who are hospice patients, but others as well, just for pain, in those cases, would cannabis be acceptable? Is there any reason why it shouldn't be, generally speaking, anyway? And, you know, it's not a form of anything that looks to be keeping the oath, but I know it's drawing a fence around a fence. The second has to do with purple rice. And has there been anything written about purple or black rice?
So on your first question, historians make for the worst type of prophets. Hard to forecast what it would look like. It's interesting, of course, medically, marijuana as a medical intervention and what it represents and is always changing, right? Even the view of cannabis in the industry, even compare what it is now to 5 years ago, much has changed our impression. I think there may even be, kosher certification. This is not my world. But I think that there are bakeries. You have to check this out. I know this is being recorded, but so maybe this is not the place to discuss it. But I do know that already, Passover or not, cannabis has entered into the logical or illogical discussions of kosher certification. And it'll be interesting to see when it's about where does it enter into that moment. Peanut oil was axed from the Passover industry because of a migration of Hungarian folkway in the 1960s. It was a period of identity politics, of reconsidering what was an authentic looking Jew, an authentic looking kosher cuisine, and its fall is very much part of historical circumstance. What cannabis? I have no idea. I also plead ignorant on purple rice. It would be if it's separate. My sense is that right when you hear rice, you think Sparta, bacon. So again, about nomenclature and labeling is my guess, but again, you never know.
I'm a hospice chaplain. I specialize in hospice, so it's a question that I would deal with naturally, and that's why it fascinates me. For those who need it, really do need it for pain. Certainly.
Yeah. Wow. Really interesting. Okay.
Thank you, by the way.
No, my absolute pleasure. Great to be with you all.
This has been excellent.
Oh, well, yeah, I just report the news very late. Any other questions?
Thank you very much. This was interesting because I was mourning the loss of peanut oil and I didn't know what happened to it. So you have solved, you've answered.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Beloved peanut oil, which was replaced with disgusting cottonseed oil. But now that you've been talking about it, how could they ever enter anybody's mind that cotton seeds are not even edible? But I think the trail is from a thing to the oil, and then suddenly oils become a suspicious item, no matter what they're made of. So you have cottonseed oil, which is, you know, it shouldn't even be fed to animals. And then you have, and then, oh, any kind of oil. So like cannabis oil, oh, well, because it's an oil, so therefore it's not, you know, you got to be worried about it. Instead of the kidney yeast thing, it just, you know, Ainla Dovarsof.
I'll even share with you, is that an indicator that it was, peanut was going to go into disuse? I'll share it really quickly. Is in a book based on a song by a Rabbi Kunda, Boruch Learns His Brachos. There's a whole section of it, a whole portion of the lyric about what to do about peanuts. And I believe this is from the 1980s. I wasn't prepared to lecture on this per se, but Ruth, you had made me think about it. Is that an indicator that things were on the verge of change? Is that there's a discussion of the use of peanuts in Jewish culture and Orthodox culture in particular, but Passover doesn't make the cut in any of the illustrations. And you can find history in the most unusual places. Diana, you have your hand up.
Yeah, my husband can't find oil kosher for Pesach, so what oil is kosher for Pesach? And also, someone told me that the Heinz ketchup is kosher for Pesach. It has sugar and salt in it, and it's from Israel. We can't read it because it's in, I don't know how to read Hebrew script. Yeah. So would that be considered kosher also for Pesach?
I believe if it has an OUP, you're okay. Of course, Heinz was given a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Orthodox Union of being almost a righteous Gentile for his contribution to the kosher palate. Ancillary to all of this is, you know, it's a lesson of how do you ensure sustainability? So think about another item that might have been on the outs is coffee beans. Well, suggested Maxwell House, if we are the curators of a Haggadah, they can't possibly wipe us out. So, oh, and that already predates us in the 1930s. I say this with a certain level of animation, but I mean, I'm quite serious, is that once you're tethered directly to the text of Passover, the Haggadah, coffee's here to stay.
So what oil could he get? And the person did not show the back of the Heinz bottle. It only had this script in the front of the Heinz bottle. So I don't know whether it's kosher for Passover, but I showed it to my husband because I don't do the food shopping.
I believe, generally speaking, there is now a Passover section of your local supermarket. And if it's there and if it has an OU with a P, that P denotes it's good for Passover.
But so it has to have the OUP on it. And what about the oil?
I make no royalties off of the Orthodox Union. This is beyond my pay grade.
Because those are the two things he can't find.
Wow.
He said if he has to do without ketchup for 8 days, then he'll do without ketchup for 8 days.
Got it. Wow.
Yeah.
There is a number of oils that are OUP. Olive oils out there, avocado, grapeseed, you can get.
Yeah, we have olive oil, but I think to make the matzo balls, he tried 1 year olive oil and it didn't stay together. So you got to get actual oil.
See, it's a very live issue. Okay.
And why did mothers do away with making their four sticks a margarine? I have to buy a big tube.
Crisco is a different story. Well,
I just thought to get a good laugh today for you.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Okay, I think we have time for one more question.
Have a happy Pesach.
A wonderful way to conclude. All right. Well, I think we're going to go to other matters in our subsequent learning together. And I'm really excited. I'm glad to have Rabbi Kelman bringing me to all of you. And I look forward to learning with you some more.
I think we look forward to having you again and again. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, my agent. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.